At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
How does a teacher stay in teaching for a long time without getting burnt out, right? How do you avoid the burnout? It's a very stressful job. I'm not going to lie. Like, it's objectively stressful. You're making so many decisions, like, all the time. The fact that I'm used to it doesn't take away the fact that, you know, I'm still making as much, if not more, decisions than an NFL quarterback, I'm saying. No question about it.
Yeah.
So he said that he answered this question. He says, you know what, how you avoid the burnout? Teach students, not subjects.
So feel me when I bring it, sing it loud. I'm from the loo and I'm proud. Run a mile for the cause. I'm righteous above the law. Play my style.
Hi, guys. It's your girl, Nahama, your favorite Jew from the loo. Welcome back to my podcast. And tonight, you have a very special guest because while I might be your favorite Jew from the loo, tonight we have my mother's favorite. So tonight we have my big brother, my oldest brother, another brother who hopefully will be getting onto my podcast next time he's in town. But my oldest brother, Rabbi Chaim Yachnis, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Nachama. It's a real just pleasure to be here with you. Yeah. And I really thank you for giving me a chance to sit down and have a chat.
Looking forward. He's here with his whole family. He's got four kids. He's here from Orlando, Florida. So, like, the fact that he took the time to be here with us, so special. So I'm so appreciative. And as you know, my mission here is to share real stories and to create connection because now more than ever before, we feel very alone. And so if we can share our passions and our stories, perhaps people out there can feel a little less alone and feel some sort of relatability. So with that being said, let's dive right into your story.
Okay, let's do it.
So that being said, my mother had a dream. My mother had a dream that her three kids would go in different directions. She wanted both my brothers to go into business, and she wanted me to be a teacher. Well, she was kind of right. Because both my brothers are teachers, and I'm in business. So what can you say? We tried. But yeah, my brother's been a teacher now going on 7 years. And tonight I wanted to kind of roll back in time. And let's first discuss, what was it about teaching of all the career paths that you could have gone into that drew you into it?
So there's a really amazing story that happened to me. This is back when I was in third grade. So I guess that would be I was like 8 or 9 years old. And I had this really special teacher, Rabbi Reuven Pollack, who sadly passed away at a young age, but had the privilege of being in his class in the third grade here in St. Louis at Epstein Hebrew Academy. And during recess, Rabbi Pollack used to play football with us. He was very into football, and he always used to play, you know, with our class and other classes that shared the same recess period. And there was one game where we were playing, and I was playing on offense, and somebody else on my team caught the ball, and I was running alongside my teammate, and there was a defender coming his way, and I blocked the defender, and in doing so, my teammate was able to score a touchdown. So I was like, okay, just like regular normal play. Like, I didn't really make a big deal. I was happy, but, you know, I was kind of like, all right. Great touchdown. And Rabbi Pollack made the biggest deal, and he was like saying how like it was such a great play and how, you know, I could have like blocked the guy from behind, which is an illegal block, and I was like careful to bump him from the side to make sure that it was like legal. And to this day, I'm not really sure whether I was purposely trying to do it or not, but one thing I can tell you is that comment, even though it was in, you know, the context of recess, this wasn't even in the classroom, but it just gave me such a boost. And it just made me feel like $1 million. Like, just the fact that he noticed something good in me, and he made me feel good. And, you know, at that time in my life, you know, my parents had gotten divorced, you know, about a year earlier. So I would imagine, I don't exactly remember all my emotions from the time, but I would imagine I was probably, you know, had a lot going on the inside. And any chance for a person to just give me a pick-me-up really meant a lot to me. And that really stuck with me for a long time. I can't exactly tell you when, you know, I said to myself, you know, I want to be a teacher because of what happened. But looking back on one of the big, you know, influences in my life, Rabbi Pollack would definitely, if there were many experiences, but that one in particular really stood out to me. And like, I could really visualize and just imagine what it was like and how good I felt. And I said to myself, you know, if I have an opportunity to make even one person feel that good, then I would love to take advantage. And, you know, teaching is definitely has many opportunities to be able to build up other people. And Rabbi Pollack's positive comment to me really gave me an inspiration of what could be accomplished even with one comment.
Wow. I love that. That's so powerful. I didn't know this. I'm learning this from the first time too. You know, it's like, obviously my, I don't know if you guys knew this, but my mother is a first grade teacher. And so like, we definitely have a lot of people in our family who are teachers, but that's so true. You know, there's so many teachers who do make lasting impressions, both positive and negative. There's so much power that can be held in a classroom. And I know so many of my friends whose careers in different areas have been influenced from one comment from a teacher, you know, it's really powerful. I remember Rabbi Pollack, he was an incredible force to be sure. And you're so lucky that you got to be in his classroom.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. There was actually another incident with Rabbi Pollack also like really sticks out to me. When I was in, I think, sixth grade, I was in his class again in sixth grade and seventh grade. So in sixth grade, one of the subjects in his class, he was a Judaics teacher. So I would say that was like my strong area. I was stronger in Judaic studies than I was in English studies. And in sixth grade, you know, I kind of was, you know, of the mentality that, you know, I'm pretty good anyways at this stuff. I don't really have to try so hard in his class because, you know, I'm naturally good at it. So I remember on the first test that we had that year, I remember scoring a 54 on the test. And like, that was like the lowest score, like by far, that I'd ever gotten on any test in Judaic studies, at least.
Yeah.
And I was really bummed out about it. And I remember coming home and telling my mother, and I think I cried, you know, like I was like really like broken, like, you know, this was supposed to be my strong area. And so pretty sure what happened was she called Rabbi Pollack to like tell him that like I was really bummed out. And then he goes ahead and he calls me up on the phone.
Wow.
And like, he just gave me like, you know, just a encouraging speech about how, you know, you got to try hard in whatever you do. You can't take anything for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And he really instilled confidence in me that if I applied myself and really worked according to my capabilities, that I would definitely see improvement. The next test, I got like a 75 or something. But he knew that I had studied. I maybe even told him the night before, you know, Rabbi Pollack, I made sure to study for the test. And he wrote a comment on that test that like, you see, like I knew you were going to do better, keep at it. And, you know, you're going to keep on seeing improvement. And I think that also like, you know, was something that really, you know, made me feel like, you know, like, wow, like look how much you could do for another person just by showing a little care, a phone call, a little note on a test. It didn't take him that many, you know, minutes to do, but the impact that I felt from it was long lasting.
Yeah, that's so powerful. And just to clarify for like anyone in the audience, just so you guys know, in Jewish Orthodox schools, we have like half day is our English studies, like your typical math, science, English. And then the second part of the day is our Judaic studies. So there's definitely a lot more courses that you're taking throughout the years. And part of it also is that in our community, a lot of the community members are teachers too. So the fact that like a lot of the teachers in like, whether they're teaching Judaic or English studies, they'll be like family friends. They'll be people who you see at synagogue. And it's just, it's really beautiful that like there's so much connection where it's not just, oh, I see you from these few hours in the school. Like they see a little soul who they care so much about that they're willing to go above and beyond and make that phone call, you know, just to care about you. And I'm not going to lie, it really is helpful to know that you actually didn't do so well on a test score. Because this is my oldest brother. Like, he's the one who I was, like, looked up to because there's a 10-year age gap. And I was always like, oh, like, he's perfect. Like, he's Chaim. And, like, he was valedictorian even despite his 54. He was valedictorian in both 8th grade and 12th grade. And I remember because when you were 14, I was like around 4 at your graduation. And I just remember like how proud Ma was of you, of like everything you had accomplished, how hard you had worked. And I remember being like, wow, I want her to look at me that way. And I don't know if I would have done as well in school if you hadn't kind of like paved the way. So 54 in all, it's good to know.
Even I am not perfect.
No.
Shockingly.
No, for sure. And I think that's definitely changed in our relationship, like as adult siblings versus like child siblings, you know, where it's like as a child, you don't really necessarily meet the same path in terms of intellect, maturity. We were very different stages of life. But now as adults, it's really cool to kind of just get to know each other as people, you know?
Definitely.
Love that.
Yeah.
Okay. So you went throughout school. You had that defining moment kind of when third grade, but it wasn't quite yet clear. At what point when you were deciding your future, did you decide, okay, teaching is where I'm going to go?
So for many years, I guess, of my adult life, I studied at a rabbinical seminary in New York. And one of the messages that was like often promoted time and again was that how important it is to be able to share, you know, God's gift, the Torah, with other Jewish people, and how each person should like feel a responsibility that if there's some way that I could help spread and to share, you know, God's Torah, you know, God's word, with other, you know, Jews, regardless of their affiliation, you know, whether they're very unaffiliated or very affiliated, you know, with Judaism, each person has to look within and ask themselves the question, like, what can I do to, you know, advance Hashem's Torah and bring it out into the world? And that message was, you know, drilled constantly again and again and again. And as I matured and as I, you know, I arrived there at age 21. I was there until age 31. So I definitely had many years to be able to contemplate that message and to try to understand and internalize, like, how does this fit with my personality and my talents that I was gifted with, you know, from God? And is there any way that I could join in this really holy, you know, an important mission?
Yeah.
And just thinking it through and just thinking about myself and thinking about my personality and what I had to offer, you know, I definitely saw within myself that I'm articulate. I'm somebody who's not afraid to get up in front of others. I have a tremendous passion for learning. You know, I remember actually one of my rabbeim, one of my spiritual mentors in the yeshiva, he mentioned the idea that a person who gives over Hashem's Torah could be likened to a missile. And he basically explained that the missile has two main components. There's the bomb that's inside of, you know, the missile, and then there's the delivery system. And he said that the analogy, that's an analogy. And how does that apply in real life? He says the bomb is, you know, a person spends years studying the Torah, studying its values and internalizing, you know, all of the Torah learning. And that's sort of your bomb. And then the delivery system is, you know, each person was gifted from God with their own unique personality, their own talents and own abilities to be able to give it over. And you know, part of that ability to be able to give and to share, I would say any teacher would say this, is like, if you want to be effective at giving over whatever you're teaching, you have to feel passionate. You have to love it. You have to believe in it. You have to feel that, like, this is amazing and incredible. And I definitely, you know, as I began thinking towards the end of my tenure at the yeshiva, you know, like 20, you know, 27, 28 years old, as I, you know, knew that, you know, my years were coming to an end, I really was thinking about myself and like, who am I? And like, do I really feel passionately about the Torah? And I really felt like, yeah, like, I really think it's amazing. It's incredible. There's so much beauty there. And I really want to share this with others. And, you know, putting that together with my experiences in life that I, you know, some of which I shared earlier, and just understand my personality, it just kind of made sense and fit. Like, this is something that I want to do. This is something that I could see myself getting satisfaction out of. And I really think that I have a lot to offer to I have a lot to offer to the world, and I think I could really inspire other people to become greater Jews. So
yeah,
that's kind of was how it all came together.
I think what's super inspiring about your story as well is the fact that you combined taking that time where typically in a typical college sense, you finish school and you're what, like 22 years old, you're a kid, and you're supposed to go out and start teaching, right? Versus like what I really like about the way you went about going to figure out being a teacher and becoming a rabbi was that you took the time for self-development. So you're in a very different stage in your late 20s than you are in your early 20s, right? And at that point, you had been married. You had at least two kids at that point, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of that changes you as a person. You grow and you develop. And then also, you didn't just do that, but you went above and beyond and you got your master's in education to really just make sure that you can give your all. So what was it that made you decide to take that extra step and get your master's in education as well?
So it's an interesting question. Truthfully, that really was more just to open up more options for myself as far as career-wise. There are certain you know, Jewish schools that they require that you have some form of a degree. Others, right, less so. And you know, I was more doing it just to have it on the resume in case I came to a school and, you know, some schools, they just have like this technical requirement. You got to have a degree.
Right.
So it was more just to cover my bases. There was one particular lesson that did stand out to me from my college courses. I think it's probably the only one that I would say was valuable, but I thought it was a good lesson.
Yeah.
I remember in one of the courses, they were talking about when you're collaborating with parents of a child. So they were saying how there was one teacher one time who at the beginning of the meeting, so, you know, you have the teacher, you know, sitting down in the chair, you have the parents sitting down. I don't know if there was like another administrator present. And then the teacher goes ahead and brings an empty chair and says, like, this chair over here, like, this is for Jimmy, you know, just to make up a name. And the teacher was trying to impress upon all of the stakeholders at that meeting that, like, let's remember that the purpose of this meeting is to help Jimmy. It's not about, like, I'm right, you're wrong. Like, it's about helping the child. And he wanted to, like, you know, have that representation of the child there so that everybody could keep their focus. I thought that was a nice lesson.
Yeah.
Would I say it was worth it going through all the hours of college? I don't think I'm going to go that far, but listen, you know,
that's an interesting debate. That is definitely a hot topic nowadays where people are starting to wonder, is college really necessary? Now, obviously, there's certain degrees that for certain careers, like being a doctor, a lawyer, you're going to need to go to college. But is it necessarily necessary for every job? Maybe not.
Right.
Or maybe it could shrink the amount of time you spend. Right. Like, do you really need a 4-year, 3-year, 2-year degree? Maybe not.
Right. Right.
You know,
I definitely would say for teaching that experience is the greatest way of learning. So,
oh yeah,
in my experience, I'm saying I feel like I've learned most from experience.
And I would say, honestly, even as a graphic designer, that same thing is true for me. Like, I had to go to school to learn how to use the programs, right? Could I have learned it myself on YouTube? Probably. But at the same time, it's like you said, sometimes you just need that piece of paper to, like, make you stand out, open up certain like opportunities for you. But you're right. There literally is nothing like actual experience. And that's actually the perfect segue into the next question I have, which is, you know, you had all this passion, right? And as a student, when you're studying for a degree, you have this vision of like the impact you're going to make and what that's going to look like when you're actually in front of a classroom. But sometimes, especially in the beginning, all beginnings are hard. So the reality of actually teaching, what was that transition like? And what were some of the lessons you've learned in the beginning?
So the beginning of teaching was very hard. I'm not going to lie.
It's real.
Very hard. If I had to encapsulate exactly what was hard about it, and also just looking back in hindsight, you know, they always say in hindsight, everything is 20/20. Mm-hmm. With all of the passion and desire to want to give over, I think the biggest lesson that I've come to learn, I wouldn't say I'm done learning this lesson, but it's definitely clearer to me than it was when I walked in a classroom for the first time. When you are walking into a classroom, it doesn't really matter what age group you're dealing with, you're dealing with human beings. Mm. And human beings are all very unique. There's no two people that are created the same. Everybody's personality is different. Everybody's life circumstances are different. Everybody's way of looking at the world is different. And you need to respect that. You need to respect the fact that you're not dealing with teaching subjects. You know, you're dealing with real human beings. And I definitely, you know, in recalling the struggles of my first year, I think striking that balance of I want to actualize this passion that I have to give over while at the same time recognizing that I'm dealing with human beings who don't share the passion, not to any fault of their own, because like, was I any different when I was a kid?
Well, no. Let's pause. What age do you teach?
So in my first year, I was teaching in the mornings, fourth and fifth grade boys, so like 9 and 10 year olds, mm-hmm. Or 10 and 11 really. And then second graders in the afternoon. So like seven-year-olds, or turned eight in the middle of the year.
Yeah.
But I would say but regardless of the ages, I would maintain that the biggest challenge that I found was you're dealing with human beings, and like they're not just going to, as passionate as you are about the subject, passion is an important prerequisite to being able to be a good teacher, but it doesn't guarantee that they're going to be receptive. Like you still need to respect their needs, and whether it's physical needs or emotional needs, like, you know, they're human. And I actually, a couple of years ago, there was a great quote that I saw. I know you said I'm supposed to say a quotable quote. I have a few of mine, but this is a good one though. Even if it's not my quotable quote.
Yeah.
There was a great rabbi from New York. His name was Rav Avram Palm. He mm-hmm. was the head rabbi of a famous yeshiva in New York called Tor Vadas. So Rav Palm said a great line. In the context that he said this line was, one of his students asked him, how does a teacher stay in teaching for a long time without getting burnt out, right? How do you avoid the burnout? It's a very stressful job, I'm not going to lie. Like, it's objectively stressful. You're making so many decisions, like, all mm-hmm. the time. The fact that I'm used to it doesn't take away the fact that, you know, I'm still making as much, if not more, decisions than an NFL quarterback. I'm saying, no question about it.
Yeah.
So he said that he answered this question. He says, you know what, how you avoid the burnout? Teach students, not subjects.
Ooh, it's so powerful.
And the point he was basically making was, every year you're walk, or every, not every year, every day, every minute that you're in a classroom, recognize that you are teaching a person. You're not just teaching math. You're not just teaching science. You're not just teaching Chumash or Gemara, whatever subject it is. Mm-hmm. You're teaching students. And yes. When you have that mindset of, I'm dealing with human beings. So, I mean, he was saying, you know, that keeps it fresh, because you're never, ever going to have the same human beings every single year. It's always going to be different students. And as mm-hmm. generations changes, so will the challenges, and so will the needs of every student that you're dealing with.
Yeah.
But I really took that line to heart, and it really was a good reminder for me, you know, when I walk into the classroom, like, what is, you know, like we always in teaching, especially, it's like, what's my anything? Like, what's my objective? What is my goal here? And that's a really important goal in teaching, is to recognize that you're dealing with people whose needs are all going to be different and constantly changing. And you need to be respectful of that. And you need to, you know, obviously you need to give over as a teacher. That's your job. You're supposed to, you have curriculums and you have, you know, knowledge that you want to impart to the students. But everything has to be within the context of I'm dealing with a person.
Yeah. And I would add on to that advice that I've heard as well for teachers. And I can't quote who it was like you did, but, you know, if anyone knows, let me know. But the quote is that you, in order to be a good teacher, you need to remember what it was like to be that age of the grade that you are teaching. And what I think is so ironic is that the age that you're teaching is about the age that impacted you to even start thinking about being a teacher. Like, to this day, you still remember what it felt like to be that third grade child where Rabbi Pollack went above and beyond to make you feel special. You remember what it was like to be in sixth grade when he went above and beyond, right? And so it's like, that's the age range that you're teaching now. So the fact that you could still recall it and feel those feelings, I think that really speaks volumes of why you're such a great teacher. Yeah.
Yes, that definitely would agree that it's important to recognize the impact that you can make even on young children. You know, yeah. I once remember, forgot the exact quote, but there was this famous psychologist, Chaim Janot, and he said that a child, he made an analogy, he's like, a child is like a blank piece of paper, you know, and like whatever, you know, however you interact with that child, like that's going to make like a serious impression. Like, you're dealing with a blank slate, and like the way you treat them and the way you relate to them, like that makes a real big difference. Even if they're not giving you the feedback at that moment, like, you can be certain, like, it's really making a difference. And it's a great responsibility, but it also, you know, it also goes to show, like, you know, how big of a difference you can make even at such a young age.
For sure. Now, as challenging as it was, which I'm sure in the beginning it really was, were there any points when you questioned if this was the right career for you? Did you question thinking about giving it up, you know? Because it's a hard transition to go into.
I will say that I'm a pretty stubborn fellow. It works, you know, for my benefit and sometimes to my detriment.
Yeah.
But you know, also like you know, I moved with my family like out of town, like to do, you know, to be able to teach Torah, mm-hmm. and I invested a lot, picked up my family, moved away from New York, which is not an easy move for everybody. So I went in with a mindset. I don't think I knew how hard it was going to be going in, but I definitely mm-hmm. went in with a mindset that I know just from, you know, the little that I knew about teaching, this is not an easy profession. And I think going in with the mindset, like, it's not going to be so easy, definitely helped me to be able to, among that with many other things, I would definitely have to give a lot of credit to Hashem, to God, mm-hmm. who definitely is constantly with me. I could go on and on for hours about just the, you know, all of the divine intervention of when I really needed to pick me up, and like, you know, I would get, you know, something to like really make me feel like, you know, I'm doing a great job, I'm making a good impact, even when times are a little bit tough. I don't think I ever felt like I want to quit this. Did I sometimes feel like, wow, like this is really hard? And yes, definitely, often, for sure, the first year, you know.
Yeah.
I definitely remember being very down and very, you know, it's not a pleasant feeling when you just go in every day and like you feel like you're just barely treading above water. Mm-hmm. It definitely got easier in the second year. Things have, you know, gotten easier as it's progressed, but what can I say? It's you do have to have thick skin for it. It's definitely you have thick skin, and you can't take things personally.
I think that's good advice for everyone in any career field that you're in, right? Because I think a lot of us almost go into with like, you know, rose colored glasses, thinking it's going to be amazing and wonderful. And because we have passion and vision, it's going to be successful, right?
Right.
And then sometimes the reality is you're going to get punched in the face a few times before you figure out how to fight the game, right? And so I really appreciate you being so real and open about your experiences, because, you know, sometimes when you hear other speakers or teachers talk, all you hear is the motivation, the passion, the how good it felt after years of experience. You know what I mean? I don't think a lot of people open up and talk about the struggles and challenges you're going to deal with when you're first going into it. So I'm sure a lot of teachers who will hear this are going to feel a lot of like chizuk or strength from this. So thank you.
Yes, yes. Definitely very normal to feel overwhelmed. So don't feel overwhelmed if you're a teacher. It's normal.
Yeah, it's normal. Just keep doing it, you know? Experience only happens if you keep doing it. So you can't give up. You know, 7 years in, you're feeling better about it. You have more confidence. You have more experience. You've definitely seen more about like the trends of the teaching and students and where things are going. So looking towards the future, now that you have more of like a handle in your career, what do you want out of teaching?
On a personal level, I would say that something that I continue to work on is a very driven personality, very passionate about what I do.
Mm-hmm.
In Judaism, you know, there's a very important concept that our job is to do the best that we can. Mm-hmm. And the results are up to God, up to Hashem. And that's a very hard concept, you know, in general for a person to internalize, particularly as a teacher and as somebody who just is very invested in what I do and really strives to be as best as I could be day in, day out. It's challenging to sometimes be able to strike that balance and to internalize, I've done whatever I could do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain reasonable line of what's considered, you know, good efforts, you know, be it in giving over the information, being in a certain aspect of classroom management. But ultimately, the results are 0% me. Like, the results are totally up to God. Like, if he wants a certain result to happen, then he's going to make it happen. Mm-hmm. I have to do whatever I could do to try to bring about my desired outcome, but the result is not up to me. Moving forward, I would like to, you know, grow in that area as a person, and I believe that the more I could internalize that concept, I think it's going to make me, you know, just be more relaxed. You know, I'm more relaxed now than I was when I first started, but I still feel like this is a lifelong journey. And to the degree that I'm able to internalize that my job is to just give it my best effort, but to simultaneously keep at the forefront of my mind that I'm not in charge of the results, I think that's going to make me overall a more effective, teacher, because I'm not going to, you know, get down on myself for being less than perfect. I'm not going to get thrown off kilter, you know, when things inevitably don't go according to the script, which they never do. I'm saying, like, I would say 90 to 95% of the time, even when everything's planned out great, there are so many things that you can't control that just cause you to shift. And again, for me, it's like natural to make these adjustments because I'm used to teaching,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't mean that there's not, you know, it doesn't mean that shifting doesn't have to be made.
Right.
So I think moving forward, like, you know, where I'd like to see myself grow and become better is like to recognize, like, I'm just a human being. Like, my job is to use my God-gifted talents and my abilities that he gave me to try to be the best teacher. And this is true even though I'm teaching something religious, right? It's not about spiritual versus non-spiritual. Like, this is the Jewish mindset about all matters, whether it's a spiritual pursuit or a mundane pursuit. God is in charge of the results.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that we can internalize that, whatever, you know, aspect of life we're dealing with, I think the more equanimity we have on the inside, We're more calm. We're more able to roll with the punches. And like, these are, you know, in teaching, like, it's so important just to be able to keep that presence of mind, you know, regardless of what happens in the classroom. It's important to be able to have that sense of calm, especially younger children. Like, they're so impressionable. Like, they really like idolize you. Like, they're looking up to you and like, this is my role model. Again, not to put too much pressure on myself, but the reality is like, that is how they perceive me. And I know that the more calm, and I just know by experience, like the more calm I'm able to stay when things don't go according to plan, you know, that has a mirror effect. Like, they sense the calm, and because of that, like, they're able to stay calm. So that's, I would say, is a major area that I want to continue growing in and improving upon moving forward. And I think that's going to have positive impact on a lot of my teaching.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think that's just a really important cornerstone of me, you know, continuing to develop and become a better teacher.
Oh, yeah. And especially as since you are their role model, when they see that you give yourself that grace and that patience to be human and, you know, to learn and be real with them, that transparency and that authenticity is like one of the most best lessons you can possibly teach them. And, you know, full transparency, when I was thinking about being a teacher, because the thought did cross my mind, even though it didn't end up happening, one of the concerns that I had with being a teacher was the fact that, let's say, for example, I was a second grade teacher, right? You're dealing with a few factors. One is that it's a marriage between the parents and the teacher. Both of you are molding that child, right? And so sometimes you might try to instill certain values of how the child behaves or how their approach to learning is, but maybe the parents don't support that at home. And I was like, that would seem really frustrating to me. So that was one element that I couldn't, like, you know, get behind. And then the other element that I considered was the fact that maybe as a teacher, I somehow was able to mold and inspire this child in third grade, second grade, right? But then they move on to the next grade, and maybe the next teacher wasn't the best teacher. Was all my work for nothing? What are your thoughts on those two thoughts?
So in the first aspect of parents, I would say it's going to depend on your school.
Mm-hmm.
In general, my way, you know, has been try to be very humble, you know, like don't come across with the impression of like, you know, all the answers, like rather approach it from the perspective of you're their parent. And even if I have certain opinions about certain parenting decisions,
mm-hmm.
ultimately, like, you're their parent and you know them best. You did raise them, and God decided to give you this child. So he mm-hmm. obviously thought that you had the ability to be able to get the job done.
Right.
So, like, respect them for that, you know? And like, Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon said that, you know, when it comes to our interactions with others, he said that the way we, you know, the impression we give off to others is going to reflect back to us. Just like if you look in the water, you see the reflection in your face. That's how the heart of another person is going to reflect back. So people are very receptive to the way you perceive them. So if parents perceive you as somebody who respects them and respects them as the parents and the primary caretaker of the child, and that you're open to hear what they have to say, even if you're going to disagree ultimately, I think that definitely can preempt a lot of the tension that may rise when interacting with parents. That's worked for me. So that's just my personal thoughts on that. And with regards to maybe someone's going to mess it up. So again, like, well, number one, if, you know, using my own personal reflections, like, I can also, you know, I didn't say all the stories of some of the other teachers who made not nice comments to me, but
mm-hmm.
again, that didn't push comes to shove. Like, that didn't take away positivity of those good experiences that I had with teachers.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not an all or nothing. You know, we're humans, right? So, like, not every teacher out there is going to be perfect.
Right.
And sometimes a teacher could be going through their own crisis, and, you know, it just
they're human too,
right? So, you know, and as what I said before, like, if you think of it from that perspective, the religious perspective of like, God deals with the results and it's my job just to do my best. I think that also could, like, you know, help, you know, with your particular issue. Maybe somebody else is going to mess it up. Like, my job is not to control every human being in the world. My job is to try the best I can. And, you know, where this will take the child ultimately, like, you know.
Yeah. And I think also that child eventually grows up to be an adult. They're going to have good and bad experiences with teachers. Regardless, it's just life.
Right.
And I think one of the most important lessons when you are an adult is having the maturity to not play a victim mentality, where it's like understanding the humanness of your teachers. And then you get to choose what lessons you're going to take with you and what lessons you're going to be like, you know what, maybe that wasn't the best experience, but I will not let that define me.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this has been such a great episode. I am so grateful and thankful that you took the time to do this with me. And as you guys know, I have this tradition. It's based on this Hebrew quote. Oh my gosh, I got nervous. Guys, it's my big brother. I got nervous. but yeah, one who is wise is one who learns from everyone. So what's a quotable quote or a life lesson that you would like to share?
So I'm going to cycle back to Rabbi Pollack. And I had a interaction with one of his children last summer, and he was a little kid at the time when his father passed away. So I never really had the opportunity to really share some of my experiences with him that I'd had with his father. But I saw him last summer, and I just went over to him, and I'm like, you know, like, I just wanted to let you know, like, your father made such a big impact in my life and, like, was really one of the driving forces in my decision to become a teacher. And, you know, he was obviously very grateful that I shared all that with him. And he told me, he said that the secret to my father's success in teaching was that he had a respect for every single person's problems. And it didn't matter if he was dealing with a young child or an adult. But he always maintained a respect for, like, their problems and their issues. And so if I had to, you know, give a quotable quote, you know, and something that I definitely strive to live by every day, whether in the classroom or out of the classroom, is treat everybody's feelings and needs with equal level of respect. Don't assume that just because you're dealing with a child, therefore, they don't need to be respected and be treated with just as much sensitivity as you would treat, you know, a friend, you know, who's the same age as you, or if you're married, a spouse. Like, you have to treat every single person's needs and feelings with respect. And I think that anybody who takes that advice to heart, I think you're going to see positive results in your relationships. And I just think it's just good life advice, teaching or not.
I love that. Thank you. That was great. Yeah. So one thing I also like to do is, you know, on our platform, we're on a bunch of different ones. Sure. Is there some way that we could support you? We could always, like, share a link if there was, like, any way. So how do you want us to support you?
The best way you could really support me is just try to live by that message. Like, go out, whatever field, you know, you're working in, whether you're kid, a teenager, an adult, wherever you are in life, like, just remember the concept that every human being is special, every human being is important, and, you know, we need to do the best we can to try to treat every part of that person with respect. Is I think is just great life advice.
Love it.
I would advise everybody to do it.
Love it. Thank you. Subscribe, leave a thumbs up, positive review, and most importantly, please share with a friend. Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you have a great week. Let's get it. Let's go.